This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Gravitsky alongside Shukri Wrights here to take you from 8 to 10 Eastern. We're going deep on the NBA and NHL playoffs. We're going to ponder some NBA stars who might be on the move. We'll further explore the Julio Jones trade. We've got a lot more to look at as well. Shukri, it's our first time working together. Excited for it.
I'm excited too. I'm just a bit of a nervous wreck right now because of the Bruins and Islanders game. But other than that, I'm excited to work with you, Bobby. Like, how are you doing?
Well, so this is the beautiful thing for people listening to this show. Even if you're not watching the game, which I would recommend doing, nothing like playoff hockey. But even if you're not, you can enjoy the schadenfreude of rooting against us as we cheer on the Bruins. Or you can hop along for the ride and say, let's go black and gold. Shukri's got the jersey on, Patrice Bergeron, a.k.a. the captain.
Yes,
so
sir.
We're going to be reacting in real time. It's 1-0 Islanders right now, thanks to a Travis Zajac goal. Shukri, you mentioned to me, the Bruins almost picked him up at the deadline.
They did, and I thought that he was one of the key pieces that was going to help put this team over the top, but obviously they would end up going up to acquire Taylor Hall, and that's worked out pretty well, except that he's gone quiet offensively the last few games. But Travis Zajac was definitely a guy I was looking at for the Bruins at the trade deadline.
So we are going to talk a lot about the Bruins right here in these first two segments, as well as a look around the NHL playoffs as a whole. How do the Bruins get Taylor Hall going? He's had no points the last two games.
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of Taylor Hall's struggles offensively the last few games have come down to how the Barry Trotz has structured the Islander defense to play against that second line. We all know that in years past, it was the first line that was the engine for this team, the AK, the perfection line, which I never call them.
Yeah, I'm
but,
not a fan of that either.
Exactly.
Too many times they haven't come through in the postseason earned that nickname.
Exactly. And now, suddenly, I think now is the time that they need to figure out this defense and get things going, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. When we come back, we're going to dive further into this matchup and a look around the playoffs as a whole. Stay with us on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Gravitsky, Shukri Wrights, taking you from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Right now, the Bruins are down 1-0 to the New York Islanders. This show broadcast out of the Pepe compound here in Boston, Massachusetts. So whether it's for the schadenfreude or you want to roll with the black and gold, come hang out, enjoy this game with us. We're also going to be looking around the NHL as a whole, deep dives on the NBA playoffs. That's the league that I cover. And we're going to talk about a whole lot more, including the Julio Jones trade. There's a lot of fallout, a lot of meat on that bone that hasn't been picked at. So that's what Shukri and I are going to do later on in this program. But right now, the black and gold, the New York Islanders, it's a closeout game for NY, possibly the last game we see at Nassau Coliseum. So let's dive into it here. Shukri, what I want to start with you on, what did you make of Bruce Cassidy's decision? Hold on, I got to pause the question as the Bruins tie the game up. Brad Marchand with the goal.
Let's go!
Give it to the people, Shukri. Give them what they want.
Let's go!
That's what I'm saying. He's the master of the woo. Follow him on Twitter to get the inside joke there. And let's look at this here as Brad Marchand. I'm catching the replay.
I had to absolutely mute my mic because my explosion of emotion just now what would have been probably been too powerful to bear for our producer, who's doing a terrific job.
Well, then you gave it to the people. I love getting that on the air. That's what I want. Three passing on the goal as Marchand ties it up. He's the beneficiary.
Let's go.
So, all right, let's circle back now. Bruins tie it up.
Yeah.
In net, it's Tuukka Rask. dealing with a back injury.
Yeah.
What did you make of Cassidy's decision to roll with the veteran?
To be blunt, I absolutely hated it because, and I talked about it on Twitter earlier today. I said, listen, Tuukka's not healthy, and I get this is an elimination game. But what you have to understand is if you're going to play Tuukka, no excuses. Don't sell me the narrative of, well, he was banged up and he wasn't right. Baloney. Stop it. Do me this favor. If you're going to put him in net, fine. But you better make sure, and Tuukka better make sure that he's able to perform. That's my take on it. And the other part of it is Bruce Cassidy is rolling the dice here. And if he is wrong and if the Bruins lose his game, the evisceration from Bruin fans and the Boston media is going to be probably unlike we've seen in quite some time because everybody knows he's not healthy. And now you're going to throw him in net. Well, look at his record elimination game. I'm not talking about this record, his health. So there's a lot riding on the line right now for Bruce Cassidy and the Boston Bruins.
There certainly is. Their season's on the line. I look at it like this. This decision is not one they're making blindly. They're talking with the training staff to get a feel for what percentage is he, where it seemed like he was probably around 80%, let's ballpark it, for games 1 through 4.
Yeah.
It obviously got worse, probably going into game 5.
Yeah.
There was no point where he looked like he was moving well in that one, especially laterally.
Oh, yeah.
So he gets pulled for health reasons. He wasn't particularly effective. That's a decision that can be examined. Should Swayman have started that game at the friendly confines of the Boston Garden? Instead, they roll with Rask. Mm-hmm. They end up having to pull him. I think with this one, it seems like he's recovered to the point where they anticipated he'd look more like he did in the first 4 games. He's done so to this point, even though the Islanders are on the board. So I think they got it right rather than throwing the rookie in there in an elimination game in round 2 on the road.
You know, it's interesting. I think one of the big keys for the Boston Bruins is that as they are now in the final minute of the first period, is that when you talk about the offense, you talk about some of the things that you look at in terms of the Bruins and some of the struggles in the last couple of games, losing games 4 and 5, that is secondary scoring, the secondary line. You asked about it at the top of the show. What do I think about Taylor Hall? And he has to get going. And you cannot expect that perfection line to carry them offensively. You need to get more from lines 3 and 4. And I talked about this after game 4. Where is the offense from the bottom 6 forwards? And then also the penalty kill. The penalty kill has been a massive issue for the Bruins these last few games. There's no reasons why, despite the crappy refereeing and officiating in game 5, there's no reason why that you're allowing 3 power play goals out of 4 opportunities on the power play to the New York Islanders in game 5.
Well, so how much of it has to do with the injuries? No Kevin Miller, no Brandon Carlo, 2 critical pieces to the Bruins' PK. Mm-hmm. So how much of it is a product of that, and how much do you excuse them and write it off as, well, it's injuries and I understand, versus saying the guys who are in there have to step up?
No, the guys in there have to step up, but I understand that, like, Carlo and Miller are 2 huge parts of the blue line for the Boston Bruins. But the reality is this. You can't sit here and make excuses. You expect more from guys that are not named Charlie McAvoy. You expect more out of guys like a Mike Riley or a Vaikkanainen and so forth. Like, you expect more from the guys that's on the ice to be able to get the job done. And using Carlo and Miller being out, although it has an impact on the blue line, is not an excuse. They need to all come up big and do a good job on killing off penalties, although it's been a relatively penalty-free first period for the Bruins. They got to do a better job of tying things up defensively in front of Tuukka Rask instead of leaving him out to hang.
They certainly do. Injuries are part of the game, so yeah. If you can't overcome it, then you're going home early. Might be the case tonight for the Bruins. We shall see how the night plays out for them. When it comes to, you talked about the struggles of the bottom 6, let's start with the most important member of the group who's underperforming, and that's Charlie Coyle. How much of that is a product of who's flanking him versus him needing to get himself going?
He's got to get himself going. You know, a few days ago, I talked about this on Twitter. I said, listen, we need to see the 2019 Stanley Cup Final run version of Charlie Coyle. Because it has been absolutely maddening. And this is a byproduct of the season that he's had up until this point, in which that he has not gotten the job done offensively. And for a guy who is 6'3", 225 pounds, I think it's absolutely absurd that Charlie Coyle has not been effective defensively as well. He should be a lot more physical, but he hasn't. So to me, I think no matter how you look at it, it's absolutely infuriating to watch him at times, especially as he tries to center that third line, and he hasn't been a factor offensively or defensively.
Yeah, and it's one thing if your teammates are bringing down your production offensively. You've got to bring it defensively, and he certainly has not been effective on either side of the puck to this point, so we'll see if he can get himself going, because I think that's going to be necessary for the Bruins to pull this one out. Mm-hmm. Now for the fourth line, courtesy of Bruin Stats on Twitter, who's always dropping great knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
He says that Sean Corrali has taken 72 defensive zone faceoffs and 6 in the offensive zone in the playoffs. So how much do you look at their fourth line struggles as Bruce Cassidy and the coaching staff putting them in position to fail?
I think part of it is their inability to play shutdown hockey when they need to. Listen, your fourth line should be your checking line. You're not expecting guys like Sean Corrali or even Nick Ritchie to be physical. I mean, Nick Ritchie, yeah, sure, but Sean Corrali's not the type of player. But my big thing is also the guys that are playing that on our fourth line, especially when it hasn't been like a solidified, like, consistent fourth line like we had 2 years ago when you had obviously Corrali and Joaquin Nordstrom and so forth. That lack of continuity has shown at times in terms of on ice chemistry, in terms of, you know, like preventing the opposing on top line from scoring. And you've seen that in the series.
Shuki, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. And for those of you who haven't been paying attention to this series, here's what Bruce Cassidy said about the questionable officiating from game 5. To give you an idea of how the league thought of it, they pulled Sharon, the head official, off of this series for tonight's matchup. So here's what Bruce Cassidy said after game 5, quote, "I think they sell a lot of narrative over there. It's more like the New York Saints, not the New York Islanders. The exact calls that are getting called on us are not getting called on them." And went on when discussing Patrice Bergeron, one of the players who the Islanders had a problem with, specifically with how he takes faceoffs. He got pulled from his first 2 faceoffs in game 5. So this is what Bruce Cassidy had to say about that, referring to the officials. He said, "They just need to be better than that. Quit listening to these outside influences. I don't think they were great tonight." Again, referring to the referees. What do you make of Bruce Cassidy's comments?
Well, Bruce Cassidy wasn't lying. And I was at game 5. And I made a video on Twitter that has since gone viral. It's got, as of last time I checked, it's gotten, I think, over 62,000 views.
There we go.
And I basically went off saying that the NHL referees get paid to do a job. They need to do the job well. It was inexcusable, the lack of consistency that we saw in officiating in game 5. And Bruce Cassidy was right when he said on the postgame, which we saw on NBC Sports Boston locally. And as a result, I just knew that the following morning he's going to get fined. How much? And then when it came down, I'm like, this is typical. Congratulations, NHL. You put out a crappy product in terms of officiating, and then when you get called out, oh, we're just going to say we screwed up silently without actually saying it. But you know what? Here's some new referees. They're going to officiate the series. And to me, it's just cowardly and gutless at best. That's the best way that I could, like, categorize it for you.
I do find it interesting that they fined him but also switched officials, which is like a tacit acknowledgement of these guys were not up to par. And they
were.
There were too many instances where, and again, if you think these are just a couple of people who would like to see the Bruins advance from this series talking about it, they pulled the official off of this series. It was, I would have said it with a smile on my face had it gone in favor of the black and gold.
Yeah.
But there were back-to-back instances of high sticks against the Islanders that were uncalled. And immediately after the second one, Chris Wagner heads a stick high, and that gets flagged. Now, the third one,
which
the one
I
on Wagner
believe
that gets called, that is a penalty. It's a good call. But they let two go. They let one right before it go. So it just seemed like the officiating was not down the middle. Like I said, the Islanders complained about how Patrice Bergeron takes faceoffs. He gets pulled out of the dot on his first faceoff attempt. It kind of lets you know what's going on here. But it's a business. Bruce Cassidy knew he was going to get fined, so I'm not surprised by that. We've got a little more meat on the bone when it comes to this Bruins-Islanders series. We are going to look around. Knights and Avs, Hurricanes and Lightning wrapped up their series the other night. So we've got a lot to dive into. Bobby Krivitsky, Shukri Knights, you're listening to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky, Shukri Wright's here, bringing you from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, along with Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. Shout out to Ludacris as well. We've got a little bit of this Bruins Islanders series. It's 1-1 at the first intermission. Bruins season on the line. We've got a little bit left as we put a bow on this conversation. Here's what I want to ask you, Shukri. You're the expert here on the subject. Do you believe that the Bruins are losing this series despite being the better team, or do the Islanders have more talent?
No, the Bruins are the better team without question. I mean, you look at the lineup, like from like especially the top six, like they are better offensively. They have more firepower, and they have the better goaltending. But we've seen this movie before, where the Bruins have an act for making lesser quality goaltenders look better than what they really are. If you saw like the numbers that that Semyon Varlamov has put up, like 3-3, 2.72 goals against average, save percentage of 925. It's like, yeah, it's good, but it's not, wow, oh my God. And I think the Bruins definitely are the more talented team, but I do believe that the structure and the system that head coach Barry Trotz has them playing has an effect on them in terms of the ability to generate offensive breaking cleanly into the Islanders' off zone and whatnot.
There are so many parallels with that St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup from a few years ago, where Jordan Binnington, certainly not a household name,
yeah. He
looks unbelievable in net some games. There were some where he had a real rough go of it, but Game 7, most notably, he was like a brick wall between the pipes. And then also the fact that it was a physical opponent who said, we are just going to hit you for 60 minutes and wear you down over the course of each game, over the course of the series. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Bruins are up against right now. So I agree. I think that the Bruins have more talent than the Islanders, but it doesn't matter if you can't hold up physically. We're seeing guys go out of the lineup. We're seeing them struggle to overcome that dynamic in the game.
Yeah.
We're seeing them constantly end up getting called for retaliatory penalties. Mm-hmm. And then because of those injuries to guys like Kevin Miller and Brandon Carlo, they're giving up goals on the PK. It's how the Islanders have racked up most of their scoring.
Sure.
And then at the other end, they can't beat Varlamov.
You know, it's interesting. Carlos Lazar, he's not playing in tonight's game. Byproduct of injury. So what the Islanders realize is that we're wearing these guys down. And by doing that, guys are not going to be as effective in terms of trying to generate offense. And you need guys, for example, to be able to break through the neutral zone, be able to get opportunities. They have come far and in between. Not that they haven't been able to score, but what you've seen is guys like Taylor Hall be silenced. Krejci hasn't been much of a factor this series. You know, Craig Smith has had his moments, but by and large, for the second line, hasn't been as successful as they were against the Washington Capitals because of the physical play of the New York Islander defense.
Yeah, it's a group that needs to step up, especially because as decorated as this core is, and they won a Stanley Cup, if you now exclude Charlie McAvoy and David Pastrnak, the younger members of that group,
they
just also have a tendency of not showing up in big games. And I do think that they showed up to Game 5, but at the same time, it's another one of those stories that we've seen play out a number of times where they come out flying, they can't put one in, maybe they get the first goal, but they can't build on it, and all of a sudden the other team ends up delivering a counterpunch, and then they're able to build off that momentum, and the Bruins end up coming up short. So we've seen that a number of times, but I do want to go around the league here, starting with a topic that you brought to my attention just as we went to break in the last segment. And that is some interesting comments. Mark Scheifele, who had what I would label a dirty hit on Jake Evans, certainly unnecessary at a minimum, but he came out swinging, according to some comments that you said he had to say recently.
Yeah, so I was listening to a program on Sportsnet earlier today, and one of the things that was said that really caught my eye was he had his, I guess you can call it his farewell. Presser, you know, to wrap it up for the season, he said, quote, I thought I was going to be tried to be shut down by Philip Deneau of the Montreal Canadiens. Instead, it was the Department of Player Safety that shut me down. And I thought that was actually quite telling, considering if we all remember the hit that was absolutely just vicious on Jake Evans. Did I think that it warranted a suspension? Absolutely. But 4 games? That's tough. And obviously that had an adverse effect on the Winnipeg Jets, as believe it or not, they only scored 6 goals in 4 games against Montreal. And Montreal is playing at a level right now that is unified, that I was telling some Bruin fans earlier that this is a scary team. Yeah, we talk about Colorado and Tampa Bay, but I've said this for years. A healthy Carey Price and a locked-in Carey Price at that makes a team like Montreal incredibly dangerous in the playoffs. And here they are, just 4 wins away from going to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Can you pinpoint specifically, and it's probably a number of things, what generated this rally for the Canadiens? They had their backs against the wall against the Maple Leafs. It looked like they were destined for a round one exit down 3-1 in the series. And now all of a sudden, they've steamrolled their way through their opposition in Canada.
That was it. I think game 5 against Toronto was quite telling. When I think about it now, I think that the defense of Montreal has absolutely been phenomenal, headlined by Shea Weber and Jeff Petrie. And I think Jeff Petrie is the defensive MVP of the Montreal Canadiens. But then you also have guys like Jesper Kotkaniemi coming up huge, and as well as you got guys like Nick Suzuki who have shown up time and time again for the Montreal Canadiens. So what you're seeing is a unified effort. And you know what's interesting? Not to be outdone, you cannot forget about guys like Tyler Toffoli and as well as Josh Anderson, formerly of the Columbus Blue Jackets. At the beginning of the 2020-21 season, I said that I believe that Montreal is going to be one of the playoff teams. But we all know that they got off to such a poor start while Claude Julien was the head coach and was able to turn around under the interim head coach, Ducharme. So I think going back to that Toronto series is where they really gelled and figured it out, how to play with their backs against the wall. And when you're a team that comes back from 3-1 down in the playoffs, we've seen what it can do to a team in the playoffs historically, most notably Philadelphia in 2010, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a great point. One that I thought of as you were bringing up the coaching change is when the Devils won the Stanley Cup
2000.
After making
yes,
a coaching change
correct.
Mid-season. So now that the Canadiens have been so successful that they have some time off, are you worried if you're a Canadiens fan that that's going to halt their momentum?
No, and the reason is because Jeff Petrie got injured in Game 3, and he's going to need that time to get healthy. And I think that the time off is going to do them some good. I'm not worried about rust. The only difference between them and the Boston Bruins from 2 years ago, because remember the Bruins, they had 11 days off between the East Finals sweeping Carolina and Game 1 against the St. Louis Blues. So in this case, I think it will do them more good than anything, because this is the team that's united right now, and it's showing. Not just only in terms of the goaltending, which is that's where it starts, because Carey Price has been unbelievable during these playoffs, but also the blue line and then the forwards as well. They've also all have done a terrific job.
Yeah, you know when a team's ready to pack it in and go on vacation for the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And when they show this type of fight and resolve that they have, that should hold up over the course of however long their break lasts until the next round gets underway for them. The series that I thought was the most heavily anticipated, we almost didn't get it with the Knights and Avs because the Wild were able to push the Knights.
Yeah.
Colorado, they went through no adversity, steamrolling their way all the way up until a 2-0 lead in this series. I know Game 2 went to overtime, but nonetheless, this team has been a freight train all season long. Now they find themselves on the brink of elimination.
You know what's amazing? Playoff hockey can be real fiddle sometimes. Like, momentum is absolutely a funny thing in the playoffs. You talk about Colorado. They got off to a 6-0 start to start the playoffs. And now what you're seeing is that Vegas has finally righted the ship, and they're firing on all cylinders, getting everything, all sorts of contribution from the blue line to the forwards.
Stick with us on the Die Hard Zone Sports Map Radio Network. We're going to be talking NBA playoffs in just a bit. That's coming up next on the Die Hard Zone Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky, Shukri Wrights, taking you from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The beauty of having a game on is that you get to hear us react to it in real time. I think it's even more fun if you're watching it, but whether it's the Schadenfreude or you start to root along with us for the Bruins in this case, I think there's plenty of entertainment and enjoyment to go around on this front. And what just happened to me is pretty egregious, Shukri, where Charlie McAvoy takes an elbow to the face after the play. He's down on the ice for about 5 minutes. He's bleeding. He then proceeds to spit up blood. Sorry to be graphic, but that is what happened.
I'm not mad at that.
And yet there's no call. I don't understand that.
This is exactly what I'm talking about when I say that there has been horrible officiating this series. Like, seriously, you saw Kyle Palmieri elbow McAvoy in the face. Like, how much more do you possibly need to see? Like, what else do you need to see in order for the Bruins to get a call? If it was the reverse role, guess what would have happened? Well, maybe a 4-minute major. Well, maybe a 5-minute major. But no, since it's the Bruins, no call needed for you. So just go over there, skip over to the bench, and spit out blood in peace. Like, really? This is the inconsistent officiating that I can't tolerate anymore. If you're a hockey fan, that should make you mad.
Yeah, I don't get where the eyes are going on the part of the official who's closest to the play to not see it, but how do none of the referees take note of what happened? On top of it, you can see he's not faking it. He's bleeding out of his mouth. He's down forever. There's a scrum as a result of it. You have to be able to congregate and get this one right. Quite frankly, it's a layup, and they just missed it. It's pretty egregious. And like you're saying, like Bruce Cassidy said post-game, after the last matchup, it just seems like these calls are tending to go in the favor of the New York Islanders.
It's disgusting. Like, I don't know what else needs to happen. And now it looks like it's the Bruins. Is it the Bruins? Is the Islanders on the power play? Like, this is unbelievable. Like, so you have an elbow call that goes uncalled, and now the Bruins get penalized, and now the Islanders are on a power play. Like, this is the kind of thing that breaks the back of a team. And this is a big penalty kill for the Boston Bruins.
And we've seen how they've done on the PK of late.
Exactly. And they have not been good on the PK at all lately. So if the Bruins can kill this off, this could be huge for the Boston Bruins moving forward in this game.
I'm an eternal optimist. I like glass half full. Maybe a stop here flips the momentum, possibly a shorty, or they score right after. We shall see. Let's get back to, again, it's the series that I thought it would be the best one to this point in the playoffs.
For sure.
I'm stunned by how it's played out. You know, I give the Knights all the respect in the world coming into it. This was no doubt billed as a heavyweight matchup, justifiably so. I still can't believe that it's 3-2 Las Vegas, not Colorado. Was the turning point, even though the Knights lost game two, the fact that they took the Avs to overtime and they saw what they could build on for the next matchup?
I really believe it, but also this is something that I think that's flown under the radar. The blue line for the Vegas Golden Knights, and I'm talking most notably Alex Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore, they have been huge. And let's not forget, you've gotten contributions up and down this lineup. Max Pacioretty has been an absolute beast.
Where would they be without him?
Exactly. And that's also part of the reason why Vegas is now leading. You've seen Pacioretty come up huge time and time again. And then also, I cannot underestimate the importance of Alex Pietrangelo on this blue line and his addition going into the season. I wholeheartedly believe that he was going to be the big difference for this Vegas team that has had Stanley Cup aspirations now for a better part of 3 years. Now, what you're seeing is, although the series is not over yet between Vegas and Colorado, but keep in mind, what I've noticed is that they have done a better job defending against the top line of Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, and Mika Rantanen. You're not going to shut down Nathan MacKinnon entirely. It's just not possible. But in comparisons between games 1 and 2 and then games 3, 4, and 5, you have noticed there has been a shift in terms of how Vegas has been playing Colorado in the series.
And Grubauer, who's in the running for the Vezina, whether he wins it or not, we'll see. But they couldn't beat him for so much of this series. And now you look at Marchessault in particular. I believe he's got 5 goals in the last 3 games.
Correct. Like Marchessault has heated up like big time. And I've always believed that you get Marchessault going. This is a guy that makes this offense even more dangerous. Like, you think about it. You talk about guys like Theodore, who's becoming one of the best shutdown defensemen in the league, but he could like contribute offense. Petrangelo, terrific two-way defenseman as well. And then you talk about Max Pacioretty. Pacioretty has always had the ability to come up big time and time again in the playoffs, even going back to when he was the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. So what you're seeing now is this Vegas team, plus including Marc-Andre Fleury, because you talked about Philip Grubauer. Marc-Andre Fleury has finally gotten himself into a groove in these last 3 games, and now I think that's going to carry over into Game 6 tomorrow night.
And the Bruins did kill off that Islanders power play. For those of you who are consuming the game through this show, we certainly appreciate it here on the Diehards on SportsMap Radio Network. The last of these NHL series that we have to get to just wrapped up the other night, the Lightning and the Hurricanes. Let's rewind the clock going into it. Mm-hmm. Did you believe in the Hurricanes' chances, or Tampa Bay just too much of a wagon for you to buy into a prospect like that?
To be blunt with you, no. Honestly, because Tampa Bay and the level of hatred that I have for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and no offense to the South Florida audience, but I mean, salary cap circumvention, like how dare you? Like you sat on Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos the entire season, and now they're suddenly healthy for the playoffs. But all kidding aside, though, seriously, this team is so loaded. You talk about lines 1 through 4. We could talk about like Sorelli. You could talk about guys like Yanni Gord, and you talk about guys like Patrick Maroon, like the same guy who's won 2 straight Stanley Cups, 2019, obviously with St. Louis and so forth. And I just cannot effing believe that the Islanders just scored again. Like, I mean, are you kidding me? This is oh my God. Back to my point, but this Tampa Bay team is so loaded from top to bottom. Like, you talk about Kucherov and Stamkos, and then don't forget Braden Point. How much longer are we going to overlook Braden Point in terms of what this guy has been able to do offensively the last 3 years, 25 years old? I mean, he's just part of a great crop of, like, guys in Tampa Bay who are either entering the prime or in the prime of their careers who are one of the best goal scorers in the league.
Shu, I'm amazed that you could make your point, stop midway through to react to the goal, and without missing a beat, get back to it and finish up.
It's a skill. I'm trying to.
It's a necessary skill in this
myself
business
right now. Like it is a challenge, ladies and gentlemen. For all of you who are listening, I am trying to control myself.
Listen, we want the passion. We want the authenticity. Maybe a little distilled at times as I watch the board shake, but I love it. I'm here for it. I guarantee you that the listeners are enjoying it. You know, you've built a large following on Twitter. People want the passion.
Absolutely.
So we appreciate you bringing it on the air. We need that thunder. And when it comes to the Hurricanes and Lightning, I'm with you. I Tampa Bay is just too much of a wagon, a freight train in their own right, a term I used to describe the Avalanche earlier, although obviously they're now in trouble. And when it came to that cap circumvention, the word that I would describe it with is Belichickian.
Yes.
And
that's a perfect analogy. Yes.
Appreciate it. Every now and then I get one right. And so I tip my cap to the Lightning. But what I don't understand from a league perspective, and for the Board of Governors in particular, why is that allowed, that the cap just goes away come playoff time and these guys can come back? That, to me, the rule itself makes no sense.
I mean, if you're going to not apply it to the Tampa Bay Lightning, then you can't apply it with any of the team. But, of course, with the way that the NHL operates, can you realistically expect them to, like, apply the rules everywhere else the same way? I mean, let's talk about the New York Rangers and how they got punished severely for blasting the George Parles in the wake of the incident that took place between the Capitals and Rangers a couple of months back. So based on that alone, this whole salary cap circumvention situation, I think it's opened a whole can of worms, and I'm telling you, the NHL is going to be kicking itself, especially next season, if a team or two is able to take advantage and say, hey, Tampa Bay did it last year. What's the issue? Why can't we do it? So keep being a lookout for that.
Yeah, I don't even think we have to wait. The Lightning got two of their best players back.
Yeah.
They both look fantastic. It's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. So they might go all the way to the Stanley Cup. They might win it again. So I think that there's got to be a lot of teams around the league who are upset with the rule, when really it's on them and the fact that no one questioned this. So maybe it's one of these areas of collusion. Like in the NHL, for people who don't know, restricted free agents tend to just sit there and wait and wait and wait. And teams don't poach opposing franchises, restricted free agents. So this might be one of those areas where the owners have decided that it's in all of their best interest
exactly.
to allow this rule to continue, and they didn't miss anything. That's probably the reality here, but then again, it only takes one instance like this and a few jealous owners who have some juice around the league to rally up a group who says, we need to change this.
You know what's funny? As you were saying that, I thought about Charlie Jacobs, who happens to be the board of governors, like the head guy. Imagine if the Bruins did something like this next year. And the NHL say, hey, no, no, you can't do this. Oh, really? So one of the most powerful owners of the league, if not the most powerful owner in the league, in Jacobs, is going to say, well, Tampa Bay was able to do it last year, so what? Like, why can't we? So my big concern is that, like, what type of precedent is it going to set for an expansion team like Seattle that's going to come in to the league? Well, it's officially in the league, but they begin play this October. So what type of example are we setting, especially for the expansion teams like Vegas and Seattle? Those are going to be the two newest teams in the league.
Yeah, maybe these are the words that end up causing it to come to fruition. But
yeah.
If they don't touch it in the offseason, I don't see how, come next postseason, if there's a case that parallels what the Lightning are doing this year, that they could take that player or players and suspend them, put them on some sort of hiatus list for the playoffs.
For sure.
If they don't touch the rule, I think it's got to continue to stand. And I think, just like we're seeing right now in Tampa, it's an egregious mistake.
Exactly. And this team, I think, unless barring injuries, because listen, there's no guaranteed thing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, as we've seen historically. So before we hand the Stanley Cup to Tampa Bay,
By no means. The Knights are doing, the Avs, I cannot count them out given the talent roster.
And even just now, you overlook Montreal. And I think that even as a Bruins fan and as deep hatred I have for the Canadiens, that is a team that I think that you cannot underestimate at all. Like what they're doing, they could do damage. And mind you, they're going to be facing the winner of Vegas, Colorado. And if it's Vegas, you're going to have one hell of a goaltending match between Marc-Andre Fleury and Carey Price, who right now looks like the best goaltender in the world.
Yeah, Price has been red hot, and the Bruins-Canadiens rivalry, as big as there is in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, someone who loves an underdog story, who tends to root for chaos, if Montreal, the little engine that could, comes from down 3-1 in the playoffs to bring Canada its first Stanley Cup in however many years it's been now.
Since 1993.
So, see, he's got the exact date. Thank you. And so if they do that, first time since 1993, and they are the underdog against any of these opponents that we've named, obviously we haven't mentioned whoever comes out of this Bruins-Islanders series
yep.
right now, mm-hmm. advantage New York. But when we look at those heavyweights that we've been talking about here, like the Knights, Avs, and Lightning, Montreal pulls that off, then you got no choice but to tip your cap, Shukri. Coming up, we've got a lot of talk from the NBA playoffs. We'll bring you the latest on our thoughts on what's happening on the hardwood. Stick with us here on the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky, Shukri writes, the Bruins trail the Islanders 2-1 midway through the second period in an elimination game, with Boston trailing New York 3-2 in the series. Possibly the last game in Nassau Coliseum, unless they can take care of business either tonight or Game 7. But I want to switch gears now and talk about a legend stepping away from his sport. Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, has announced that this season will be his last one at the helm of the Duke Blue Devils. Shukri, What are your thoughts on just the legacy of Coach K? And when you hear his name, what comes to mind?
Duke. That's it. There are very few coaches that you say their name and you think of one place and one place only. And that is Coach K is Duke. Like you think of Roy Williams, North Carolina. Like, and even before him, what was it? Dean Smith. Yeah, Dean Smith as well. Like, those names are associated with one school. And Coach K, you talk about everything that he's done in college basketball, winning the national championships and so forth. Don't forget, Olympics as well. He was the head coach when Team USA won gold medal in 2008 and was head coach when the late Kobe Bryant was on those great Olympic teams as well.
Yeah, he was an assistant with the Dream Team in 92, head coach for the gold medal teams in 08, 2012, and 2016. Here's a little rundown for people on the greatness of Coach K, the Nick Saban of the collegiate basketball world, if
great
you will.
Great analogy.
He takes the Duke job in 1980 when they are the furthest thing from a blue blood program. And after 3 years, he goes on to – they only made – he takes them the second round, and from that point on, they only missed the tournament three times in his tenure. So he's one of the best to ever do it. Stick with us on the Diehards as we do deep dives on the NBA playoffs and look at some stars who could be on the moves this summer. That's coming up next on Sports Map Radio Network.